mean?
Nothing to me, but Ms. Kirova will probably have something to say when she finds out you used magic against another student.
That wasn't an attack, she scoffed. And it wasn't me. It was an act of God.
A few others laughed, much to her delight. In my imagination, I responded with, "So is this," and then slammed her into the side of the church. In real life, Lissa simply nudged me and said,
"Let's go."
She and I walked off toward our respective dorms, leaving behind laughter and jokes about our wet states and how Lissa wouldn't know anything about specialization. Inside, I seethed. I had to do something about Mia, I realized. In addition to the general irritation of Mia's bitchiness, I didn't want Lissa to have to deal with any more stress than she had to. We'd been okay this first week, and I wanted to keep it that way. "You know," I said, "I'm thinking more and more that you stealing Aaron back is a good thing. It'll teach Bitch Doll a lesson. I bet it'd be easy, too. He's still crazy about you."
"I don't want to teach anyone a lesson," said Lissa. "And I'm not crazy about him."
"Come on. She picks fights and talks about us behind our backs. She accused me of getting jeans from the Salvation Army yesterday."
"Your jeans are from the Salvation Army."
"Well, yeah," I snorted. "But she has no right making fun of them when she's wearing stuff from Target."
"Hey, there's nothing wrong with Target. I like Target."
"Well, so do I. That's not the point. She's trying to pass her stuff off like it's freaking Stella McCartney."
"And that's a crime?"
I affected a solemn face.
"Absolutely.
You've got to take revenge."
"I told you I'm not interested in revenge."
Lissa cut me a sidelong look.
"And you shouldn't be either."
I smiled as innocently as I could, and when we parted ways, I felt relieved again that she couldn't read my thoughts.
"So when's the big cat fight going to happen?"
Mason was waiting for me outside our dorm after I'd parted ways with Lissa. He looked lazy and cute, leaning against the wall with crossed arms as he watched me.
"I'm sure I don't know what you mean."
He unfolded himself and walked with me into the building, handing me his coat, since I'd let Lissa go off with my dry one.
"I saw you guys sparring outside the chapel. Have you no respect for the House of God?"
I snorted. "You've got about as much respect for it as I do, you heathen. You didn't even go. Besides, as you said, we were outside."
"And you still didn't answer the question."
I just grinned and slipped on his coat. We stood in the common area of our dorm, a well-supervised lounge and study area where male and female students could mingle, along with Moroi guests. Being Sunday, it was pretty crowded, with those cramming for last-minute assignments due tomorrow. Spying a small empty table, I grabbed Mason's arm and pulled him toward it.
"Aren't you supposed to go straight to your room?"
I hunkered down in my seat, glancing around warily. "There are so many people here today. It'll take him a while to notice me. God, I am so sick of being locked away, and it's only been a week."
"I'm sick of it, too. We missed you last night. A bunch of us went and shot pool in the rec room. Eddie was on fire."
I groaned. "Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear about your glamorous social life."
"All right."
He propped his elbow up on the table and rested his chin in his hand.
"Then tell me about Mia. You're just going to turn around and punch her one day, aren't you? I think I remember you doing that at least 10 times with people that pissed you off."
"I'm a new, reformed rose," I said, doing my best impression of demure, which wasn't very good. He emitted a choking sort of laugh. "Besides, if I do that, I'll have broken my probation with Kirova. Gotta walk the straight and narrow."
"In other words, find some way to get back at Mia that you won't get in trouble for."
I felt a smile tug at the corners of my lips. "You know what I like about you, Mace? You think just like I do."
"Frightening concept," he replied dryly.
"So, tell me what you think of this."
"I might know something about her, but I probably shouldn't tell you."
I leaned forward.
"Oh, you already tipped me off.
You've got to tell me now.
It'd be wrong, he teased. How do I know you'd use this knowledge for good instead of evil?
I batted my eyelashes. Can you resist this face? He took a moment to study me.
No, I can't, actually. Okay, here you go. Mia isn't royal.
I slouched back in my chair. No kidding. I already knew that. I've known who's royal since I was 2.
Yeah, but there's more than just that. Her parents work for one of the Drozdov lords.
I waved my hand impatiently. A lot of Moroi worked out in the human world, but Moroi society had plenty of jobs for its own kind, too. Someone had to fill them.
Cleaning stuff. Practically servants. Her dad cuts grass, and her mom's a maid.
I actually had a healthy respect for anyone who pulled a full day's work, regardless of the job. People everywhere had to do crappy stuff to make a living. But, much like with Target, it became another matter altogether when someone was trying to pass herself off as something else. And in the week that I'd been here, I'd picked up on how desperately Mia wanted to fit in with the school elite.
No one knows, I said thoughtfully. And she doesn't want them to. You know how the royals are.
He paused.
Well, except for Lyssa, of course. They'd give Mia a hard time over it.
How do you know all this?
My uncle's a guardian for the Drozdovs.
And you've just been sitting on this secret, huh?
Until you broke me. So, which path will you choose, good or evil?
I think I'll give her a grace.
Miss Hathaway, you know you aren't supposed to be here.
One of the dorm matrons stood over us, disapproval all over her face. I hadn't been joking when I said Mason thought like me. He could bullshit as well as I could.
We have a group project to do for our humanities class. How are we supposed to do it if Rose is in isolation?
The matron narrowed her eyes.
You don't look like you're doing work.
I slid over the priest's book and opened it at random. I'd placed it on the table when we'd sat down. We're, working on this. She still looked suspicious.
1 hour. I'll give you 1 more hour down here, and I'd better actually see you working.
Yes, ma'am, said Mason, straight-faced. Absolutely.
She wandered off, still eyeing us.
My hero, I declared.
He pointed at the book.
What is this?
Something the priest gave me. I had a question about the service. He stared at me, astonished. Oh, stop it and look interested. I skimmed the index. I'm trying to find some woman named Anna. Mason slid his chair over so that he was sitting right beside me.
All right. Let's study.
I found a page number, and it took me to the section on St. Vladimir, not surprisingly. We read through the chapter, scanning for Anna's name. When we found it, the author didn't have much to say about her. He did include an excerpt written by some guy who had apparently lived at the same time as St. Vladimir. And with Vladimir always is Anna, the daughter of Fyodor. Their love is as chaste and pure as that of brother and sister, and many times has she defended him from Strigoi, who would seek to destroy him and his holiness. Likewise, it is she who comforts him when the spirit becomes too much to bear, and Satan's darkness tries to smother him and weaken his own health and body. This, too, she defends against, for they have been bound together ever since he saved her life as a child. It is a sign of God's love that he has sent the blessed Vladimir a guardian such as her, one who is shadow-kissed and always knows what is in his heart and mind.
There you go, Mason said. She was his guardian.
It doesn't say what shadow-kissed means.
Probably doesn't mean anything.
Something in me didn't believe that. I read it again, trying to make sense of the old-fashioned language. Mason watched me curiously, looking very much like he wanted to help.
Maybe they were hooking up, he suggested.
I laughed. He was a saint.
So? Saints probably like sex, too. That brother and sister stuff is probably cover.
He pointed to one of the lines.
See? They were bound together.
He winked.
It's code.
Bound. It was a weird word choice, but that didn't necessarily mean Anna and Vladimir were ripping each other's clothes off.
I don't think so. They're just close. Guys and girls can just be friends.
I said it pointedly, and he gave me a dry look.
Yeah? We're friends, and I don't know what's in your heart and mind.
Mason put on a fake philosopher's look.
Of course. Some might argue that one can never know what is in the heart of a woman.
Oh, shut up, I groaned, punching him in the arm.
For they are strange and mysterious creatures,
he continued in his scholarly voice.
And a man must be a mind reader if he ever wishes to make them happy.
I started giggling uncontrollably, and I knew I'd probably get in trouble again. Well, try to read my mind and stop being such a... I stopped laughing and looked back down at the book. Bound together, and always knows what is in his heart and mind. They had a bond, I realized. I would have bet everything I owned, which wasn't much, on it. The revelation was astonishing. There were lots of vague stories and myths about how guardians and Moroi used to have bonds. But this was the first I'd ever heard of anyone specific that it had happened to. Mason had noticed my startled reaction.
You okay? You look kind of weird.
I shrugged it off. Yeah, fine. Chapter 7. A couple weeks passed after that, and I soon forgot about the Anna thing as life at the academy wrapped around me. The shock of our return had worn off a little, and we began to fall into a semi-comfortable routine. My days revolved around church, lunch with Lissa, and whatever sort of social life I could scrape together outside of that. Denied any real free time, I didn't have too hard a time staying out of the spotlight, although I did manage to steal a little attention here and there, despite my noble speech to her about coasting through the middle. I couldn't help it. I liked flirting. I liked groups. And I liked making smart-ass comments in class. Her new incognito role attracted attention simply because it was so different than before we left, back when she'd been so active with the royals. Most people soon let that go, accepting that the Dragomir princess was fading off the social radar and content to run with Natalie and her group. Natalie's rambling still made me want to beat my head against a wall sometimes, but she was really nice, nicer than almost any of the other royals, and I enjoyed hanging around her most of the time. And, just as Karova had warned, I was indeed training and working out all the time. But as more time passed, my body stopped hating me. My muscles grew tougher, and my stamina increased. I still got my ass kicked in practice, but not quite as badly as I used to, which was something. The biggest toll now seemed to be on my skin. Being outside in the cold so much was chapping my face, and only Lissa's constant supply of skincare lotions kept me from aging before my time. She couldn't do much for the blisters on my hands and feet. A routine also developed with Dimitri and me. Mason had been right about him being antisocial. Dimitri didn't hang out much with the other guardians, though it was clear they all respected him. And the more I worked with him, the more I respected him too, though I didn't really understand his training methods. They didn't seem very badass. We always started by stretching in the gym, and lately he'd been sending me outside to run, braving the increasingly cold Montana autumn. 3 weeks after my return to the academy, I walked into the gym before school one day and found him sprawled on a mat, reading a Louis L'Amour book. Someone had brought in a portable CD player, and while that cheered me up at first, the song coming from it did not. When Doves Cry, by Prince. It was embarrassing to know the title, but one of our former housemates had been obsessed with the 80s. Whoa, Dimitri, I said, tossing my bag on the floor. I realize this is actually a current hit in Eastern Europe right now, but do you think we could maybe listen to something that wasn't recorded before I was born? Only his eyes flicked toward me. The rest of his posture remained the same.
What does it matter to you? I'm the one who's going to be listening to it. You'll be outside running.
I made a face as I set my foot up on one of the bars and stretched my hamstrings. All things considered, Dmitri had a good-natured tolerance for my snarkiness. So long as I didn't slacken my training, he didn't mind my running commentary. "Hey," I asked, moving on to the next set of stretches, "what's with all the running, anyway? I mean, I realize the importance of stamina and all that, but shouldn't I be moving on to something with a little hitting? They're still killing me in group practice."
"Maybe you should hit harder," he replied dryly.
"I'm serious."
"Hard to tell the difference."
He set the book down but didn't move from his sprawl.
"My job is to get you ready to defend the princess and fight dark creatures, right?"
"Yep."
"So, tell me this. Suppose you manage to kidnap her again and take her off to the mall. While you're there, a Strigoi comes at you. What will you do?"
"Depends on what store we're in." He looked at me. "Fine, I'll stab him with a silver stake." Dmitri sat up now, crossing his long legs in one fluid motion. I still couldn't figure out how someone so tall could be so graceful.
"Oh?"
He raised his dark eyebrows.
"Do you have a silver stake? Do you even know how to use one?"
I dragged my eyes away from his body and scowled. Made with elemental magic, silver stakes were a guardian's deadliest weapon. Stabbing a Strigoi through the heart with one meant instant death. The blades were also lethal to Moroi, so they weren't given out lightly to novices. My classmates had just started learning how to use them. I'd trained with a gun before, but no one would let me near a stake yet. Fortunately, there were two other ways to kill a Strigoi.
"Okay, I'll cut his head off." "Ignoring the fact that you don't have a weapon to do that, how will you compensate for the fact that he may be a foot taller than you?"
I straightened up from touching my toes, annoyed. "Fine. Then I'll set him on fire."
"Again? With what?"
"All right. I give up. You've already got the answer. You're just messing with me. I'm at the mall, and I see a Strigoi. What do I do?" He looked at me and didn't blink.
"You run."
I repressed the urge to throw something at him. When I was finished my stretches, he told me he'd run with me. That was a first. Maybe running would give me some insight into his killer reputation. We set out into the chilly October evening. Being back on a vampiric schedule still felt weird to me. With school about to start in 1 hour, I expected the sun to be coming up, not down. But it was sinking on the western horizon, lighting up the snow-capped mountains with an orange glow. It didn't really warm things up, and I soon felt the cold pierce my lungs as my need for oxygen deepened. We didn't speak. He slowed his pace to match mine, so we stayed together. Something about that bothered me. I suddenly very much wanted his approval. So I picked up my own pace, working my lungs and muscles harder. 12 laps around the track made 3 miles. We had 9 more to go. When we reached the third-to-last loop, a couple of other novices passed by, preparing to go to the group practice I'd soon be at as well. Seeing me, Mason cheered.
"Good form, Rose."
I smiled and waved back.
"You're slowing down," Dmitri snapped, jerking my gaze from the boys.
The harshness in his voice startled me.
"Is this why your times aren't getting any faster? You're easily distracted?"
Embarrassed, I increased my speed once more, despite the fact that my body started screaming obscenities at me. We finished the 12 laps, and when he checked, he found we'd shaved 2 minutes off my best time. "Not bad, huh?" I crowed when we headed back inside for cool-down stretches. Looks like I could get as far as the limited before the Strigoi got me at the mall. Not sure how Lyssa would do.
"If she was with you, she'd be okay."
I looked up in surprise. It was the first real compliment he'd paid me since I started training with him. His brown eyes watched me, both approving and amused. And that's when it happened. I felt like someone had shot me. Sharp and biting, terror exploded in my body and in my head. Small razors of pain. My vision blurred, and for a moment, I wasn't standing there. I was running down a flight of stairs, scared and desperate, needing to get out of there, needing to find...
Me?
My vision cleared, leaving me back on the track and out of Lissa's head. Without a word to Dimitri, I tore off, running as fast as I could toward the Moroi dorm. It didn't matter that I'd just put my legs through a mini-marathon. They ran hard and fast, like they were shiny and new. Distantly, I was aware of Dimitri catching up to me, asking me what was wrong. But I couldn't answer him. I had one task and one alone. Get to the dorm. Its looming, ivy-covered form was just coming into view when Lissa met up with us, her face streaked with tears. I came to a jarring stop, my lungs ready to burst. "What's wrong? What happened?" I demanded, clutching her arms, forcing her to look into my eyes. But she couldn't answer. She just flung her arms around me, sobbing into my chest. I held her there, stroking her sleek, silky hair while I told her it was going to be all right, whatever it was. And honestly, I didn't care what it was just then. She was here, and she was safe, which was all that mattered. Dimitri hovered over us, alert and ready for any threat, his body coiled to attack. I felt safe with him beside us. A half an hour later, we were crammed inside Lissa's dorm room with three other guardians, Miss Kirova and the hall matron. This was the first time I'd seen Lissa's room. Natalie had indeed managed to get her as a roommate, and the two sides of the room were a study in contrasts. Natalie's looked lived in, with pictures on the wall and a frilly bedspread that wasn't dorm issue. Lissa had as few possessions as I did, making her half noticeably bare. She did have one picture taped to the wall, a picture taken from last Halloween, when we'd dressed up like fairies, complete with wings and glittery makeup. Seeing that picture and remembering how things used to be made a dull pain form in my chest. With all the excitement, no one seemed to remember that I wasn't supposed to be in there. Outside in the hall, other Moroi girls crowded together, trying to figure out what was going on. Natalie pushed her way through them, wondering what the commotion in her room was. When she discovered it, she came to a screeching halt. Shock and disgust showed on almost everyone's faces as we stared at Lissa's bed. There was a fox on the pillow. Its coat was reddish-orange, tinged in white. It looked so soft and cuddly that it could have been a pet, perhaps a cat, something you'd hold in your arms and snuggle with. Aside from the fact that its throat had been slit, the inside of the throat looked pink and jelly-like. Blood stained that soft coat and had run down onto the yellow bedspread, forming a dark pool that spread across the fabric. The fox's eyes stared upward, glazed over with a sort of shocked look about them, like the fox couldn't believe this was happening. Nausea built up in my stomach, but I forced myself to keep looking. I couldn't afford to be squeamish. I'd be killing Strigoi someday. If I couldn't handle a fox, I'd never survive major kills. What had happened to the fox was sick and twisted, obviously done by someone too fucked up for words. Lissa stared at it, her face death pale, and took a few steps toward it, hand involuntarily reaching out. This gross act hit her hard, I knew, digging at her love of animals. She loved them. They loved her. While on our own, she'd often begged me for a pet, but I'd always refused and reminded her we couldn't take care of one when we might have to flee at a moment's notice. Plus, they hated me. So she'd contented herself with helping in patching up strays she found and making friends with other people's pets, like Oscar the cat. She couldn't patch this fox up, though. There was no coming back for it. But I saw on her face that she wanted to help it, like she helped everything. I took her hand and steered her away, suddenly recalling a conversation from 2 years ago.
"What is that? Is it a crow?"
"Too big. It's a raven."
"Is it dead?"
"Yeah, definitely dead. Don't touch it." She hadn't listened to me back then. I hope she would now.
"It was still alive when I got back,"
Lissa whispered to me, clutching my arm.
"Barely. Oh, God, it was twitching. It must have suffered so much."
I felt bile rise in my throat now. Under no circumstances would I throw up.
"Did you?" "No. I wanted to. I started to."
"Then forget about it," I said sharply. It's stupid. Somebody's stupid joke. They'll clean it up, probably even give you a new room if you want. She turned to me, eyes almost wild.
Rose, do you remember? That one time?
Stop it, I said. Forget about it. This isn't the same thing.
What if someone saw? What if someone knows?
I tightened my grip on her arm, digging my nails in to get her attention. She flinched. No, it's not the same. It has nothing to do with that. Do you hear me? I could feel both Natalie and Dimitri's eyes on us. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Not looking like she believed me at all, Lissa nodded.
Get this cleaned up, Kirova snapped to the matron. And find out if anyone saw anything.
Someone finally realized I was there and ordered Dimitri to take me away, no matter how much I begged them to let me stay with Lissa. He walked me back to the novices' dorm. He didn't speak until we were almost there.
You know something. Something about what happened. Is this what you meant when you told Headmistress Kirova that Lissa was in danger?
I don't know anything. It's just some sick joke.
Do you have any idea who'd do it? Or why?
I considered this. Before we'd left, it could have been any number of people. That was the way it was when you were popular. People loved you, people hated you. But now, Lissa had faded off to a certain extent. The only person who really and truly despised her was Mia. But Mia seemed to fight her battles with words, not actions. And even if she did decide to do something more aggressive, why do this? She didn't seem like the type. There were a million other ways to get back at a person. No, I told him. No clue.
Rose, if you know something, tell me. We're on the same side. We both want to protect her. This is serious.
I spun around, taking my anger over the fox out on him.
Yeah, it is serious. It's all serious. And you have me doing laps every day when I should be learning to fight and defend her. If you want to help her, then teach me something. Teach me how to fight. I already know how to run away.
I didn't realize until that moment how badly I did want to learn, how I wanted to prove myself to him, to Lissa, and everyone else. The fox incident had made me feel powerless, and I didn't like that. I wanted to do something, anything. Dimitri watched my outburst calmly, with no change in his expression. When I finished, he simply beckoned me forward like I hadn't said anything.
Come on. You're late for practice.
Chapter 8. Burning with anger, I fought harder and better that day than I ever had in any of my classes with the novices. So much so that I finally won my first hand-to-hand pairing, annihilating Shane Reyes. We'd always gotten along, and he took it good-naturedly, applauding my performance, as did a few others.
The comeback's starting, observed Mason after class.
So it would seem. He gently touched my arm.
How's Lissa?
It didn't surprise me that he knew. Gossip spread so fast around here sometimes, it felt like everyone had a psychic bond. Okay. Coping. I didn't elaborate on how I knew that. Our bond was a secret from the student body. Mace, you claim to know about Mia. You think she might have done that?
Whoa, hey. I'm not an expert on her or anything. But honestly, no. Mia won't even do dissections in biology. I can't picture her actually catching a fox, let alone, killing it.
Any friends who might do it for her? He shook his head.
Not really. They're not really the types to get their hands dirty either. But who knows?
Lissa was still shaken when I met her for lunch later, her mood made worse when Natalie and her crew wouldn't shut up about the fox. Apparently, Natalie had overcome her disgust enough to enjoy the attention the spectacle had brought her. Maybe she wasn't as content with her fringe status as I'd always believed.
And it was just there, she explained, waving her hands for emphasis. Right in the middle of the bed. There was blood everywhere.
Lissa looked as green as the sweater she wore. I pulled her away before I even finished my food and immediately launched into a string of obscenities about Natalie's social skills.
"She's nice," Lissa said automatically. "You were just telling me the other day how much you liked her."
"I do like her, but she's just incompetent about certain things." We stood outside our animal behavior class, and I noticed people giving us curious looks and whispering as they passed. I sighed. "How are you doing with all this?" A half-smile crossed her face.
"Can't you already feel it?"
"Yeah, but I want to hear it from you."
"I don't know. I'll be okay. I wish everyone wouldn't keep staring at me like I'm some kind of freak."
My anger exploded again. The fox was bad. People upsetting her made it worse, but at least I could do something about them. "Who's bothering you?"
"Rose, you can't beat up everyone we have a problem with."
"Mia," I guessed.
"And others," she said evasively. "Look, it doesn't matter. What I want to know is how this could have... That is, I can't stop thinking about that time..."
"Don't," I warned.
"Why do you keep pretending that didn't happen? You, of all people. You made fun of Natalie for going on, but it's not like you've got a good grip on your control switch. You'll normally talk about anything,
but not that. We need to forget about it. It was a long time ago. We don't even really know what happened." She stared at me with those big green eyes, calculating her next argument.
"Hey, Rose."
Our conversation dropped as Jesse strolled up to us. I turned on my best smile.
"Hey."
He nodded cordially to Lissa.
"So, hey, I'm going to be in your dorm tonight for a study group. You think, maybe..."
Momentarily forgetting Lissa, I focused my full attention on Jesse. Suddenly, I so needed to do something wild and bad. Too much had happened today.
"Sure."
He told me when he'd be there, and I told him I'd meet him in one of the common areas with further instructions. Lissa stared at me when he left.
"You're under house arrest. They won't let you hang out and talk to him."
"I don't really want to talk to him. We'll slip away." She groaned.
"I just don't know about you sometimes."
"That's because you're the cautious one, and I'm the reckless one." Once animal behavior started, I pondered the likelihood of Mia being responsible. From the smug look on her psycho angel face, she certainly seemed to be enjoying the sensation caused by the bloody fox. But that didn't mean she was the culprit, and after observing her over the last couple of weeks, I knew she'd enjoy anything that upset Lissa and me. She didn't need to be the one who had done it.
"Wolves, like many other species, differentiate their packs into alpha males and alpha females, whom the others defer to. Alphas are almost always the strongest physically, though many times confrontations turn out to be more a matter of willpower and personality. When an alpha is challenged and replaced, that wolf may find himself ostracized from the group, or even attacked."
I looked up from my daydreams and focused on Ms. Meissner.
"Most challenges are likely to occur during mating season," she continued.
This naturally brought snickers from the class.
"In most packs, the alpha pair are the only ones who mate. If the alpha male is an older, seasoned wolf, a younger competitor may think he has a shot. Whether that is true works on a case-by-case basis. The young often don't realize how seriously outclassed they are by the more experienced."
The old and young wolf thing notwithstanding, I thought the rest was pretty relevant. Certainly in the academy's social structure, I decided bitterly, there seemed to be a lot of alphas and challenges. Mia raised her hand.
"What about foxes? Do they have alphas too?"
There was a collective intake of breath from the class, followed by a few nervous giggles. No one could believe Mia had gone there. Ms. Meissner flushed with what I suspected was anger.
"We are discussing wolves today, Miss Rinaldi."
Mia didn't seem to mind the subtle chastising, and when the class paired off to work on an assignment, She spent more time looking over at us and giggling. Through the bond, I could feel Lissa growing more and more upset as images of the fox kept flashing through her mind. "Don't worry," I told her. "I've got a way."
"Hey, Lissa,"
someone interrupted. We both looked up as Ralph Sarkozy stopped by our desks. He wore his trademark stupid grin, and I had a feeling he'd come over here on a dare from his friends.
"So admit it," he said. "You killed the fox. You're trying to convince Kirova you're crazy so you can get out of here again."
"Screw you," I told him in a low voice.
"Are you offering?"
"From what I've heard, there isn't much to screw," I shot back.
"Wow," he said mockingly. "You have changed. Last I remember, you weren't too picky about who you got naked with."
"And the last I remember, the only people you ever saw naked were on the internet." He cocked his head in an overly dramatic fashion.
"Hey, I just got it. It was you, wasn't it?"
He looked at Lissa, then back at me.
"She got you to kill the fox, didn't she? Some weird kind of lesbian voo..." "Ah!"
Ralph burst into flames. I jumped up and pushed Lissa out of the way, not easy to do since we were sitting at our desks. We both ended up on the floor as screams, Ralph's in particular, filled the classroom, and Ms. Meissner sprinted for the fire extinguisher. And then, just like that, the flames disappeared. Ralph was still screaming and patting himself down, but he didn't have a single singe mark on him. The only indication of what had happened was the lingering smell of smoke in the air. For several seconds, the entire classroom froze. Then slowly, everyone put the pieces together. Moroi magic specializations were well known, and after scanning the room, I deduced 3 fire users. Ralph, his friend Jacob, and Christian Ozera. Since neither Jacob nor Ralph would have set Ralph on fire, it sort of made the culprit obvious. The fact that Christian was laughing hysterically sort of gave it away, too. Ms. Meissner changed from red to deep purple.
"Mr. Ozera," she screamed. "How dare you? Do you have any idea? Report to Headmistress Kirova's office now."
Christian, completely unfazed, stood up and slung his backpack over one shoulder. That smirk stayed on his face.
"Sure thing, Miss Meissner."
He went out of his way to walk past Ralph, who quickly backed away as he passed. The rest of the class stared, open-mouthed. After that, Ms. Meissner attempted to return the class to normal, but it was a lost cause. No one could stop talking about what had happened. It was shocking on a few different levels. First, no one had ever seen that kind of spell. A massive fire that didn't actually burn anything? Second, Christian had used it offensively. He had attacked another person. Moroi never did that. They believed magic was meant to take care of the earth, to help people live better lives. It was never, ever used as a weapon. Magic instructors never taught those kind of spells. I don't think they even knew any. Finally, craziest of all, Christian had done it. Christian, whom no one ever noticed or gave a damn about. Well, they'd noticed him now. It appeared someone still knew offensive spells after all, and as much as I had enjoyed the look of terror on Ralph's face, it suddenly occurred to me that Christian might really and truly be a psycho. "Liss," I said as we walked out of class, "please tell me you haven't hung out with him again." The guilt that flickered through the bond told me more than any explanation could.
"Liss!"
I grabbed her arm.
"Not that much," she said uneasily. "He's really okay."
"Okay? Okay?" People in the hall stared at us. I realized I was practically shouting. "He's out of his mind. He set Ralph on fire. I thought we decided you weren't going to see him anymore."
"You decided, Rose, not me."
There was an edge in her voice I hadn't heard in a while.
"What's going on here? Are you guys... you know?"
"No," she insisted. "I told you that already, God."
She shot me a look of disgust.
"Not everyone thinks... and acts, like you do.
I flinched at the words. Then we noticed that Mia was passing by. She hadn't heard the conversation, but had caught the tone. A snide smile spread over her face.
Trouble in paradise?
Go find your pacifier and shut the hell up, I told her, not waiting to hear her response. Her mouth dropped open, then tightened into a scowl. Lissa and I walked on in silence, and then Lissa burst out laughing. Like that, our fight diffused.
Rose.
Her tone was softer now. Lissa, he's dangerous. I don't like him. Please be careful. She touched my arm.
I am. I'm the cautious one, remember? You're the reckless one.
I hoped that was still true. But later, after school, I had my doubts. I was in my room doing homework when I felt a trickle of what could only be called sneakiness coming from Lissa. Losing track of my work, I stared off into space, trying to get a more detailed understanding of what was happening to her. If ever there was a time for me to slip into her mind, it was now, but I didn't know how to control that. Frowning, I tried to think what normally made that connection occur. Usually, she was experiencing some strong emotion, an emotion so powerful it tried to blast into my mind. I had to work hard to fight against that. I always sort of kept a mental wall up. Focusing on her now, I tried to remove the wall. I steadied my breathing and cleared my mind. My thoughts didn't matter, only hers did. I needed to open myself to her and let us connect. I'd never done anything like this before. I didn't have the patience for meditation. My need was so strong, however, that I forced myself into an intense, focused relaxation. I needed to know what was going on with her, and after a few more moments, my effort paid off. I was in. Chapter 9. I snapped into her mind, once again seeing and directly experiencing what went on around her. She was sneaking into the chapel's attic again, confirming my worst fears. Like last time, she met no resistance. Good God, I thought. Could that priest be any worse about securing his own chapel? Sunrise lit up the stained glass window, and Christian's silhouette was framed against it. He was sitting in the window seat.
You're late, he told her. Been waiting a while.
Lissa pulled up one of the rickety chairs, brushing dust off it.
I figured you'd be tied up with Headmistress Kirova.
He shook his head.
Not much to it. They suspended me for a week, that's all. Not like it's hard to sneak out.
He waved his hands around.
As you can see.
I'm surprised you didn't get more time.
A patch of sunlight lit up his crystal blue eyes.
Disappointed?
She looked shocked.
You set someone on fire.
No, I didn't. Did you see any burns on him?
He was covered in flames.
I had them under control. I kept them off of him.
She sighed.
You shouldn't have done that.
Straightening out of his lounging position, he sat up and leaned toward her.
I did it for you.
You attacked someone for me?
Sure. He was giving you and Rose a hard time. She was doing an okay job against him, I guess. But I figured she could use the backup. Besides, this'll shut anyone else up about the whole fox thing, too.
You shouldn't have done that, she repeated, looking away.
She didn't know how to feel about this generosity.
And don't act like it was all for me. You liked doing it. Part of you wanted to, just because.
Christian's smug expression dropped, replaced by one of uncharacteristic surprise. Lissa might not be psychic, but she had a startling ability to read people. Seeing him off guard, she continued,
Attacking someone else with magic is forbidden, and that's exactly why you wanted to do it. You got a thrill out of it.
Those rules are stupid. If we used magic as a weapon instead of just for warm and fuzzy shit, Strigoi wouldn't keep killing so many of us.
It's wrong, she said firmly. Magic is a gift. It's peaceful.
only because they say it is. You're repeating the party line we've been fed our whole lives.
He stood up and paced the small space of the attic.
It wasn't always that way, you know. We used to fight, right along with the Guardians, centuries ago. Then people started getting scared and stopped. Figured it was safer to just hide. They forgot the attack spells.
Then how did you know that one?
He crooked her a smile.
Not everyone forgot.
Like your family? Like your parents?
The smile disappeared.
You don't know anything about my parents.
His face darkened. His eyes grew hard. To most people, he might have appeared scary and intimidating, but as Lyssa studied and admired his features, he suddenly seemed very, very vulnerable.
You're right, she admitted softly after a moment. I don't. I'm sorry.
For the second time in this meeting, Christian looked astonished. Probably no one apologized to him that often. Hell, no one even talked to him that often. Certainly no one ever listened. Like usual, he quickly turned into his cocky self.
Forget it.
Abruptly, he stopped pacing and knelt in front of her so they could look each other in the eye. Feeling him so close made her hold her breath. A dangerous smile curled his lips.
And really, I don't get why you, of all people, should act so outraged that I used forbidden magic.
Me, of all people? What's that supposed to mean?
You can play all innocent if you want. And you do a pretty good job, but I know the truth.
What truth is that?
She couldn't hide her uneasiness from me or Christian. He leaned even closer.
That you use compulsion all the time?
No, I don't, she said immediately.
Of course you do. I've been lying awake at night trying to figure out how in the world you two were able to rent out a place and go to high school without anyone ever wanting to meet your parents. Then I figured it out. You had to be using compulsion. That's probably how you broke out of here in the first place.
I see. You just figured it out, without any proof.
I've got all the proof I need, just from watching you.
You've been watching me? Spying on me to prove I'm using compulsion?
He shrugged.
No. Actually, I've been watching you just because I like it. The compulsion thing was a bonus. I saw you use it the other day to get an extension on that math assignment. And you used it on Ms. Carmack when she wanted to make you go through more testing.
So you assume it's compulsion. Maybe I'm just really good at convincing people.
There was a defiant note in her voice. Understandable, considering her fear and anger. Only she delivered it with a toss of her hair, which, if I didn't know any better, might have been considered flirtatious. And I did know better, right? Suddenly, I wasn't sure. He went on, but something in his eyes told me he'd noticed the hair, that he always noticed everything about her.
People get these goofy looks on their faces when you talk to them. And not just any people. You're able to do it to Moroi. Probably vampires, too. Now that's crazy. I didn't even know that was possible. You're some kind of superstar. Some kind of evil, compulsion-abusing superstar.
It was an accusation, but his tone and presence radiated the same flirtatiousness she had. Lyssa didn't know what to say. He was right. Everything he'd said was right. Her compulsion was what had allowed us to dodge authority and get along in the world without adult help. It was what had allowed us to convince the bank to let her tap into her inheritance. And it was considered every bit as wrong as using magic as a weapon. Why not? It was a weapon. A powerful one. One that could be abused very easily. Moroi children had it drilled into them from an early age that compulsion was very, very wrong. No one was taught to use it, though every Moroi technically had the ability. Lyssa had just sort of stumbled into it, deeply, and as Christian had pointed out, she could wield it over Moroi as well as humans and vampires.
What are you going to do, then? She asked. You going to turn me in?
He shook his head and smiled.
No. I think it's hot.
She stared, eyes widening and heart racing. Something about the shape of his lips intrigued her.
"Rose thinks you're dangerous," she blurted out nervously. "She thinks you might have killed the fox."
I didn't know how I felt about being dragged into this bizarre conversation. Some people were scared of me. Maybe he was, too. Judging from the amusement in his voice when he spoke, it appeared he wasn't.
"People think I'm unstable, but I tell you, Rose is 10 times worse. Of course, that makes it harder for people to fuck with you, so I'm all for it."
Leaning back on his heels, he finally broke the intimate space between them.
"And I sure as hell didn't do that. Find out who did, though, and what I did to Ralph won't seem like anything."
His gallant offer of creepy vengeance didn't exactly reassure Lyssa, but it did thrill her a little.
"I don't want you doing anything like that. And I still don't know who did it."
He leaned back toward her and caught her wrists in his hands. He started to say something, then stopped and looked down in surprise, running his thumbs over faint, barely there scars. Looking back up at her, he had a strange, for him, kindness in his face.
"You might not know who did it, but you know something. Something you aren't talking about."
She stared at him, a swirl of emotions playing in her chest.
"You can't know all my secrets," she murmured.
He glanced back down at her wrists and then released them, that dry smile of his back on his face.
"No, I guess not."
A feeling of peace settled over her, a feeling I thought only I could bring. Returning to my own head and to my room, I sat on the floor staring at my math book. Then, for reasons I didn't really get, I slammed it shut and threw it against the wall. I spent the rest of the night brooding until the time I was supposed to meet Jesse came around. Slipping downstairs, I went into the kitchen, a place I could visit so long as I kept things brief, and caught his eye when I cut through the main visiting area. Moving past him, I paused and whispered,
"There's a lounge on the 4th floor that nobody uses. Take the stairs on the other side of the bathrooms and meet me there in 5 minutes. The lock on the door is broken."
He complied to the second, and we found the lounge dark, dusty, and deserted. The drop in guardian numbers over the years meant a lot of the dorms stayed empty, a sad sign for Moroi society, but terribly convenient right now. He sat down on the couch, and I lay back on it, putting my feet in his lap. I was still annoyed after Lyssa and Christian's bizarre attic romance, and wanted nothing more than to forget about it for a while. "You really here to study, or was it just an excuse?" I asked.
"No, it was real. Had to do an assignment with Meredith."
The tone in his voice indicated he wasn't happy about that.
"Ooh," I teased. "Is working with a vampire beneath your royal blood? Should I be offended?"
He smiled, showing a mouthful of perfect white teeth and fangs.
"You're a lot hotter than she is."
"Glad I made the cut."
There was a sort of heat in his eyes that was turning me on, as was his hand sliding up my leg. But I needed to do something first. It was time for some vengeance.
"Mia must, too, since you guys let her hang out with you. She's not royal."
His finger playfully poked me in the calf.
"She's with Aaron, and I've got a lot of friends who aren't royal, and friends who are damps. I'm not a total asshole."
"Yeah, but did you know her parents are practically custodians for the Drozdovs?"
The hand on my leg stopped. I'd exaggerated, but he was a sucker for gossip, and he was notorious for spreading it.
"Seriously?"
"Yeah, scrubbing floors and stuff like that." I could see the wheels turning in his dark blue eyes, and had to hide a smile. The seed was planted. Sitting up, I moved closer to him and draped a leg over his lap. I wrapped my arms around him, and without further delay, thoughts of Mia disappeared as his testosterone kicked in. He kissed me eagerly, sloppily even, pushing me against the back of the couch, and I relaxed into what had to be the first enjoyable physical activity I'd had in weeks. We kissed like that for a long time, and I didn't stop him when he pulled off my shirt. "I'm not having sex," I warned between kisses. I had no intention of losing my virginity on a couch in a lounge. He paused, thinking about this, and finally decided not to push it.
Okay.
But he pushed me onto the couch, lying over me, still kissing me with that same fierceness. His lips traveled down to my neck, and when the sharp points of his fangs brushed against my skin, I couldn't help an excited gasp. He raised himself up, looking into my face with open surprise. For a moment, I could barely breathe, recalling that rush of pleasure that a vampire bite could fill me with, wondering what it'd be like to feel that while making out. Then, the old taboos kicked in. Even if we didn't have sex, giving blood while we did this was still wrong. Still dirty. "Don't," I warned.
"You want to."
His voice held excited wonder.
"I can tell."
"No, I don't." His eyes lit up.
"You do."
"How?"
"Hey, have you done it before?"
"No," I scoffed. "Of course not." Those gorgeous blue eyes watched me, and I could see the wheels spinning behind them. Jesse might flirt a lot and have a big mouth, but he wasn't stupid.
"You act like you have. You got excited when I was by your neck."
"You're a good kisser," I countered, though it wasn't entirely true. He drooled a little more than I would have preferred. "Don't you think everyone would know if I was giving blood?" The realization seized him.
"Unless you weren't doing it before you left. You did it while you were gone, didn't you? You fed Lissa."
"Of course not," I repeated. But he was onto something and he knew it.
"It was the only way. You didn't have feeders. Oh, man."
"She found some," I lied. It was the same line we'd fed Natalie, the one she'd spread around and that no one except Christian had ever questioned. "Plenty of humans are into it."
"Sure," he said with a smile.
He leaned his mouth back to my neck. "I'm not a blood whore," I snapped, pulling away from him.
"But you want to. You like it. All you damp girls do."
His teeth were on my skin again, sharp. "Wonderful." I had a feeling hostility would only make things worse, so I diffused the situation with teasing. "Stop it," I said gently, running a fingertip over his lips. "I told you, I'm not like that. But if you want something to do with your mouth, I can give you some ideas."
That piqued his interest. "Yeah? Like what?"
And that's when the door opened. We sprang apart. I was ready to handle a fellow student, or even possibly the matron. What I was not ready for was Dimitri. He burst in the door like he expected to find us, and in that horrible moment, with him raging like a storm, I knew why Mason had called him a god. In the blink of an eye, he had crossed the room and jerked Jesse up by his shirt, nearly holding the Moroi off the ground.
"What's your name?"
barked Dimitri.
Jesse, sir. Jesse Zelkos, sir."
"Mr. Zelkos, do you have permission to be in this part of the dorm?"
"No, sir."
"Do you know the rules about male and female interactions around here?"
"Yes, sir."
"Then I suggest you get out of here as fast as you can, before I turn you over to someone who will punish you accordingly. If I ever see you like this again..."
Dimitri pointed to where I cowered, half-dressed on the couch.
"I will be the one to punish you. And it will hurt. A lot. Do you understand?"
Jesse swallowed, eyes wide. None of the bravado he usually showed was there. I guess there was usually, and then there was being held in the grip of a really ripped, really tall, and really pissed off Russian guy.
"Yes, sir."
"Then go."
Dimitri released him, and if possible, Jesse got out of there faster than Dimitri had burst in. My mentor then turned to me, a dangerous glint in his eyes. He didn't say anything, but the angry, disapproving message came through loud and clear. And then it shifted. It was almost like he'd been taken by surprise, like he'd never noticed me before. Had it been any other guy, I would have said he was checking me out. As it was, he was definitely studying me. Studying my face, my body, and I suddenly realized I was only in jeans and a bra, a black bra at that. I knew perfectly well that there weren't a lot of girls at this school who looked as good in a bra as I did. Even a guy like Dimitri, one who seemed so focused on duty and training and all of that, had to appreciate that. And finally, I noticed that a hot flush was spreading over me, and that the look in his eyes was doing more to me than Jesse's kisses had. Dimitri was quiet and distant sometimes, but he also had a dedication and an intensity that I'd never seen in any other person. I wondered how that kind of power and strength translated into, well, sex. I wondered what it'd be like for him to touch me and... Shit! What was I thinking? Was I out of my mind? Embarrassed, I covered my feelings with attitude. You see something you like? I asked.
Get dressed.
The set of his mouth hardened, and whatever he'd just felt was gone. That fierceness sobered me up and made me forget about my own troubling reaction. I immediately pulled my shirt back on, uneasy at seeing his badass side. How'd you find me? You following me to make sure I don't run away?
Be quiet,
he snapped, leaning down so we were at eye level.
A janitor saw you and reported it. Do you have any idea how stupid this was?
I know, the whole probation thing, right?
Not just that. I'm talking about the stupidity of getting in that kind of situation in the first place.
I get in that kind of situation all the time, comrade. It's not a big deal. Anger replaced my fear. I didn't like being treated like a child.
Stop calling me that. You don't even know what you're talking about.
Sure I do. I had to do a report on Russia and the RSSR last year.
USSR. And it is a big deal for a Morai to be with a vampire girl. They like to brag.
So?
So?
He looked disgusted.
So don't you have any respect? Think about Lisa. You make yourself look cheap. You live up to what a lot of people already think about vampire girls, and it reflects back on her. And me.
Oh, I see. Is that what this is about? Am I hurting your big, bad male pride? Are you afraid I'll ruin your reputation?
My reputation is already made, Rose. I set my standards, and lived up to them long ago. What you do with yours remains to be seen.
His voice hardened again.
Now get back to your room, if you can manage it without throwing yourself at someone else.
Is that your subtle way of calling me a slut?
I hear the stories you guys tell. I've heard stories about you.
Ouch. I wanted to yell back that it was none of his business what I did with my body. But something about the anger and disappointment on his face made me falter. I didn't know what it was. Disappointing someone like Kirova was a non-event. But Dimitri? I remembered how proud I'd felt when he praised me the last few times in our practices. Seeing that disappear from him? Well, it suddenly made me feel as cheap as he'd implied I was. Something broke inside of me. Blinking back tears, I said, "Why is it wrong to, I don't know, have fun? I'm 17, you know, I should be able to enjoy it."
You're 17, and in less than a year, someone's life and death will be in your hands.
His voice still sounded firm, but there was a gentleness there, too.
If you were human, or Morai, you could have fun. You could do things other girls could.
But you're saying I can't. He glanced away, and his dark eyes went unfocused. He was thinking about something far away from here.
When I was 17, I met Ivan Zelkos. We weren't like you and Lisa, but we became friends, and he requested me as his guardian when I graduated. I was the top student in my school. I paid attention to everything in my classes, but in the end, it wasn't enough. That's how it is in this life. One slip, one distraction.
He sighed.
And it's too late.
A lump formed in my throat as I thought about one slip or one distraction costing Lisa her life. Jesse's a Zeklos, I said, suddenly realizing Dmitri had just thrown around a relative of his former friend in charge.
I know.
Does it bother you? Does he remind you of Ivan?
It doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter how any of us feel.
But it does bother you. It suddenly became very obvious to me. I could read his pain, though he clearly worked hard to hide it. You hurt. Every day, don't you? You miss him. Dmitri looked surprised, like he didn't want me to know that. Like I'd uncovered some secret part of him. I'd been thinking he was some aloof, antisocial, tough guy, but maybe he kept himself apart from other people, so he wouldn't get hurt if he lost them. Ivan's death had clearly left a permanent mark. I wondered if Dmitri was lonely. The surprised look vanished, and his standard serious one returned.
It doesn't matter how I feel. They come first. Protecting them.
I thought about Lyssa again. Yeah, they do. A long silence fell before he spoke again.
You told me you want to fight, to really fight. Is that still true?
Yes, absolutely.
Rose, I can teach you, but I have to believe you're dedicated, really dedicated. I can't have you distracted by things like this.
He gestured around the lounge.
Can I trust you?
Again, I felt like crying under that gaze, under the seriousness of what he asked. I didn't get how he could have such a powerful effect on me. I'd never cared so much about what one person thought. Yes, I promise.
All right. I'll teach you. But I need you strong. I know you hate the running, but it really is necessary. You have no idea what Strigoi are like. The school tries to prepare you, but until you've seen how strong they are and how fast, well, you can't even imagine. So I can't stop the running and the conditioning. If you want to learn more about fighting, we'll need to add more trainings. It'll take up more of your time. You won't have much left for your homework or anything else. You'll be tired. A lot.
I thought about it, about him, and about Lyssa. It doesn't matter. If you tell me to do it, I'll do it. He studied me hard, like he was still trying to decide if he could believe me. Finally, satisfied, he gave me a sharp nod.
We'll start tomorrow.
Chapter 10.
Excuse me, Mr. Nagy? I can't really concentrate with Lyssa and Rose passing notes over there.
Mia was attempting to distract attention from herself, as well as from her inability to answer Mr. Nagy's question, and it was ruining what had otherwise been a promising day. A few of the Fox rumors still circulated, but most people wanted to talk about Christian attacking Ralph. I still hadn't cleared Christian of the Fox incident. I was pretty sure he was psycho enough to have done it, as some crazy sign of affection for Lyssa. But, whatever his motives, he had shifted the attention off her, just as he'd said. Mr. Nagy, legendary for his ability to humiliate students by reading notes aloud, homed in on us like a missile. He snatched the note away, and the excited class settled in for a full reading. I swallowed my groan, trying to look as blank and unconcerned as possible. Beside me, Lyssa looked like she wanted to die.
My, my, he said, looking the note over. If only students would write this much in their essays. One of you has got considerably worse writing than the other, so forgive me if I get anything wrong here.
He cleared his throat.
So, I saw J last night, begins the person with bad handwriting. To which the response is, what happened? Followed by no fewer than 5 question marks. Understandable, since sometimes 1, let alone 4, just won't get the point across, eh?
The class laughed, and I noticed Mia throwing me a particularly mean smile.
The first speaker responds, what do you think happened? We hooked up in one of the empty lounges.
Mr. Nagy glanced up after hearing some more giggles in the room. His British accent only added to the hilarity.
May I assume, by this reaction, that the use of hook up pertains to the more recent, shall we say, carnal application of the term than the tamer one I grew up with?
More snickers ensued. Straightening up, I said boldly, Yes, sir, Mr. Nagy, that would be correct, sir. A number of people in the class laughed outright.
Thank you for that confirmation, Miss Hathaway. Now, where was I?
Ah, yes. The other speaker then asks,
How was it?
The response is, Good, punctuated with a smiley face to confirm said adjective.
Well, I suppose kudos are in order for the mysterious J, So, like, how far did you guys go?
Ladies, said Mr. Nagy, I do hope this doesn't surpass a PG rating.
Not very. We got caught.
And again, we are showed the severity of the situation, this time through the use of a not-smiling face.
What happened?
Dimitri showed up. He threw Jesse out and then bitched me out.
The class lost it, both from hearing Mr. Nagy say bitched and from finally getting some participants named.
Why, Mr. Zeklos, are you the aforementioned Jay? The one who earned a smiley face from the sloppy writer?
Jesse's face turned beet red, but he didn't look entirely displeased at having his exploits made known in front of his friends. He'd kept what had happened a secret thus far, including the blood talk, because I suspected Dimitri had scared the hell out of him.
Well, while I applaud a good misadventure as much as the next teacher, whose time is utterly wasted, do remind your friends in the future that my class is not a chat room.
He tossed the paper back onto Lissa's desk. Miss Hathaway, it seems there's no feasible way to punish you, since you're already maxed out on penalties around here.
Ergo, you, Miss Dragomir, will serve two detentions instead of one on behalf of your friend. Stay here when the bell rings, please.
After class, Jesse found me, an uneasy look on his face.
Hey, about that note? You know, I didn't have anything to do with that. If Belikov finds out about it, you'll tell him? I mean, you'll let him know I didn't...
Yeah, I interrupted him. Don't worry, you're safe. Standing with me, Lissa watched him walk out of the room. Thinking of how easily Dimitri had thrown him around, and of his apparent cowardice, I couldn't help but remark, You know, Jessie's suddenly not as hot as I used to think. She only laughed.
You better go. I've got desks to wash.
I left her, heading back for my dorm. As I did, I passed a number of students gathered in small clusters outside the building. I regarded them wistfully, wishing I had the free time to socialize.
No, it's true, I heard a confident voice say.
Camille Conta. Beautiful and popular, from one of the most prestigious families in the Conta clan. She and Lissa had sort of been friends before we left, in the uneasy way two powerful forces keep an eye on each other.
They, like, clean toilets or something.
Oh, my God, her friend said. I'd die if I was Mia.
I smiled. Apparently, Jesse had spread some of the stories I'd told him last night. Unfortunately, the next overheard conversation shattered my victory.
I heard it was still alive, like twitching on her bed.
That's so gross. Why would they just leave it there?
I don't know. Why kill it in the first place?
You think Ralph was right? That she and Rose did it to get kicked?
They saw me and shut up. Scowling, I skulked off across the quadrangle. Still alive. Still alive. I'd refused to let Lissa talk about the similarities between the fox and what happened 2 years ago. I didn't want to believe they were connected, and I certainly didn't want her to either. but I had not been able to stop thinking about that incident, not only because it was chilling, but because it really did remind me of what had just happened in her room. We had been out in the woods near campus one evening, having skipped out on our last class. I'd traded a pair of cute, rhinestone-studded sandals to Abby Badika for a bottle of peach schnapps. Desperate, yes, but you did what you had to in Montana, which she'd somehow gotten a hold of. Lissa had shaken her head in disapproval when I suggested cutting class to go put the bottle out of its misery, but she'd come along anyway, like always. We found an old log to sit on near a scummy green marsh. A half moon cast a tiny sliver of light on us, but it was more than enough for vampires and half-vampires to see by. Passing the bottle back and forth, I grilled her on Aaron. She'd fessed up that the two of them had had sex the week before, and I felt a surge of jealousy that she'd been the one to have sex first. So, what was it like? She shrugged and took another drink.
I don't know. It wasn't anything.
What do you mean it wasn't anything? Didn't the earth move or the planets align or something?
No,
she said, smothering a laugh.
Of course not.
I didn't really get why that should be funny, but I could tell she didn't want to talk about it. This was around the time the bond had begun forming, and her emotions were starting to creep into me now and then. I held up the bottle and glared at it. I don't think this stuff is working.
That's because there's barely any alcohol in...
The sound of something moving in the brush came from nearby. I immediately shot up, putting my body between her and the noise.
It's some animal,
she said when a minute went by in silence. That didn't mean it wasn't dangerous. The school's wards kept out strigoi, but wild animals often wandered into the outskirts of campus, posing their own threats. Bears, cougars. Come on, I told her. Let's head back. We hadn't gone very far when I heard something moving again, and someone stepped out into our path.
Ladies?
Ms. Karp. We froze, and whatever quick reactions I'd shown back by the marsh disappeared as I delayed a few moments in hiding the bottle behind my back. A half smile crossed her face, and she held out her hand. Sheepishly, I gave the bottle to her, and she tucked it under her arm. She turned without another word, and we followed, knowing there would be consequences to deal with.
You think no one notices when half a class is gone?
She asked after a little while. Half a class?
A few of you apparently chose today to skip. Must be the nice weather. Spring fever.
Lissa and I trudged along. I'd never been comfortable around Ms. Karp since the time she'd healed my hands. Her weird, paranoid behavior had taken on a strange quality to me, a lot stranger than before. Scary, even. And lately, I couldn't look at her without seeing those marks by her forehead. Her deep red hair usually covered them, but not always. Sometimes there were new marks. Sometimes the old ones faded to nothing. A weird fluttering noise sounded to my right. We all stopped.
One of your classmates, I imagine,
murmured Ms. Karp, turning toward the sound. But when we reached the spot, we found a large black bird lying on the ground. Birds, and most animals, didn't do anything for me, but even I had to admire its sleek feathers and fierce beak. It could probably peck someone's eyes out in 30 seconds, if it weren't obviously dying. With a last, half-hearted shake, the bird finally went still.
What is that? Is it a crow? I asked.
Too big, said Ms. Karp. It's a raven.
Is it dead?
Asked Lissa. I peered at it. Yeah, definitely dead. Don't touch it.
Probably attacked by another bird, observed Ms. Karp. They fight over territory and resources sometimes.
Lissa knelt down, compassion on her face. I wasn't surprised since she'd always had a thing for animals. She'd lectured me for days after I'd instigated the infamous hamster and hermit crab fight. I'd viewed the fight as a testing of worthy opponents. She'd seen it as animal cruelty. Transfixed, she reached toward the raven.
Liss, I exclaimed, horrified. It's probably got a disease.
but her hand moved out like she hadn't even heard me. Miss Karp stood there like a statue, her white face looking like a ghost's. Lys's fingers stroked the raven's wings.
Lys, I repeated, starting to move toward her, to pull her back.
Suddenly, a strange sensation flooded through my head, a sweetness that was beautiful and full of life. The feeling was so intense, it stopped me in my tracks. Then, the raven moved. Lyssa gave a small scream and snatched her hand back. We both stared, wide-eyed. The raven flapped its wings, slowly trying to right itself and stand up. When it managed to do so, it turned toward us, fixing Lyssa with a look that seemed too intelligent for a bird. Its eyes held hers, and I couldn't read her reaction through the bond. At long last, the raven broke the gaze and lifted into the air, strong wings carrying it away. Wind stirring the leaves was the only sound left.
"Oh, my God," breathed Lyssa. "What just happened?"
"Hell if I know," I said, hiding my stark terror. Miss Karp strode forward and grabbed Lyssa's arm, forcefully turning her so that they faced each other. I was there in a flash, ready to take action if crazy Karp tried anything, though even I had qualms about taking down a teacher.
"Nothing happened," said Miss Karp in an urgent voice, her eyes wild-looking.
"Do you hear me? Nothing. And you can't tell anyone about what you saw. Both of you. Promise me you won't ever talk about this again."
Lyssa and I exchanged uneasy glances.
"Okay," she croaked out.
Ms. Karp's grip relaxed a little.
"And don't ever do it again. If you do, they'll find out. They'll try to find you."
She turned to me.
"You can't let her do it. Not ever again."
On the quad, inside my dorm, someone was saying my name.
"Hey, Rose, I've called you like 100 times.
I forgot about Ms. Karp and the raven and glanced over at Mason, who had apparently started walking with me toward the dorm while I was off in la-la land. "Sorry," I mumbled. "I'm out of it. Just, tired."
"Too much excitement last night?"
I gave him a narrow-eyed look. "Nothing I couldn't handle."
"I guess."
He laughed, though he didn't exactly sound amused.
"Sounds like Jesse couldn't handle it."
"He did okay."
"If you say so. But personally, I think you've got bad taste."
I stopped walking. "And I don't think it's any of your business." He looked away angrily.
"You made it the whole class's business."
"Hey, I didn't do that on purpose."
"Would have happened anyway. Jesse's got a big mouth."
"He wouldn't have told."
"Yeah," said Mason, "because he's so cute and has such an important family."
"Stop being an idiot," I snapped. "And why do you even care? Jealous I'm not doing it with you?" His flush grew, going all the way to the roots of his red hair.
"I just don't like hearing people talk shit about you, that's all. There are a lot of nasty jokes going around. They're calling you a slut."
"I don't care what they call me."
"Oh, yeah. You're really tough. You don't need anyone."
I stopped. "I don't. I'm one of the best novices in this fucking place. I don't need you acting all gallant and coming to my defense. Don't treat me like I'm some helpless girl." I turned around and kept walking, but he caught up to me easily. The woes of being 5'7".
"Look, I didn't mean to upset you. I'm just worried about you."
I gave a harsh laugh.
"I'm serious. Wait," he began. "I, did something for you, sort of.
I went to the library last night and tried to look up St. Vladimir." I stopped again.
"You did?"
"Yeah, but there wasn't much on Anna. All the books were kind of generic. Just talked about him healing people, bringing them back from the edge of death. That last part hit a nerve."
Was there anything else?" I stammered.
He shook his head.
"No. You probably need some primary sources, but we don't have any here."
"Primary what?" He scoffed, a smile breaking over his face.
Do you do anything but pass notes? We just talked about them the other day in Andrew's class. They're books from the actual time period you want to study. Secondary ones are written by people living today. You'll get better information if you find something written by the guy himself, or someone who actually knew him.
Huh. Okay.
What are you, like a boy genius now? Mason gave me a light punch in the arm. I pay attention, that's all. You're so oblivious. You miss all sorts of things. He smiled nervously. And look, I'm really sorry about what I said. I was just jealous, I realized. I could see it in his eyes. How had I never noticed this before? He was crazy about me. I guess I really was oblivious. It's all right, Mace. Forget about it. I smiled. And thanks for looking that stuff up. He smiled back, and I went inside, sad that I didn't feel the same way about him. Chapter 11.
You need something to wear? Lissa asked.
Hmm? I glanced over at her. We were waiting for Mr. Nagy's Slavic arts class to start, and I was preoccupied with listening to Mia adamantly deny the claims about her parents to one of her friends.
It's not like they're servants or anything, she exclaimed, clearly flustered.
Straightening her face, she tried for haughtiness.
They're practically advisors. The Drozdovs don't decide anything without them.
I choked on a laugh, and Lissa shook her head.
You're enjoying this way too much.
Because it's awesome. What did you just ask me? I dug through my bag, messily looking for my lip gloss. I made a face when I found it. It was almost empty. I didn't know where I was going to score some more.
I asked you if you needed something to wear tonight, she said.
Well, yeah, of course I do. But none of your stuff fits me.
What are you going to do?
I shrugged my shoulders. Improvise, like always. I don't really care anyway. I'm just glad Kirova's letting me go. We had an assembly tonight. It was November 1st, All Saints' Day, which also meant we'd been back almost a month now. A royal group was visiting the school, including Queen Tatiana herself. Honestly, that wasn't what excited me. She'd visited the academy before. It was pretty common and a lot less cool than it sounded. Besides, after living among humans and elected leaders, I didn't think much of stiff royals. Still, I'd gotten permission to go because everyone else would be there. It was a chance to hang out with actual people for a change and not stay locked in my dorm room. A little freedom was definitely worth the pain of sitting through a few boring speeches. I didn't stay to chat with Lissa after school like I usually did. Dimitri had stuck to his promise about extra trainings, and I was trying to stick to mine. I now had 2 additional hours of practice with him, one before and one after school. The more I watched him in action, the more I understood the badass god reputation. He clearly knew a lot. His 6 Molnia marks proved as much, and I burned to have him teach me what he knew. When I arrived at the gym, I noticed he was wearing a t-shirt and loose running pants, as opposed to his usual jeans. It was a good look for him. Really good. Stop looking, I immediately told myself. He positioned me so we stood facing each other on the mat and crossed his arms.
What's the first problem you run into when facing a Strigoi?
They're immortal? Think of something more basic. More basic than that? I considered. They could be bigger than me and stronger. Most Strigoi, unless they'd been human first, had the same height as their Moroi cousins. Strigoi also had better strength, reflexes, and senses than vampires. That's why guardians trained so hard. We had a learning curve to compensate for. Dimitri nodded.
That makes it difficult, but not impossible. You can usually use a person's extra height and weight against them.
He turned and demonstrated several maneuvers, pointing out where to move and how to strike someone. Going through the motions with him, I gained some insight into why I took such a regular beating in group practice. I absorbed his techniques quickly and couldn't wait to actually use them. Near the end of our time together, he let me try.
Go ahead,
he said.
Tried to hit me.
I didn't need to be told twice. Lunging forward, I tried to land a blow and was promptly blocked and knocked down onto the mat. Pain surged through my body, but I refused to give in to it. I jumped up again, hoping to catch him off guard. I didn't. After several more failed attempts, I stood up and held out my hands in a gesture of truce. Okay, what am I doing wrong?
Nothing.
I wasn't as convinced. If I wasn't doing anything wrong, I'd have rendered you unconscious by now.
Unlikely. Your moves are all correct, but this is the first time you've really tried. I've done it for years.
I shook my head and rolled my eyes at his older and wiser manner. He'd once told me he was 24. Whatever you say, Grandpa. Can we try it again?
We're out of time. Don't you want to get ready?
I looked at the dusty clock on the wall and perked up. Almost time for the banquet. The thought made me giddy. I felt like Cinderella, but without the clothes. Hell yeah, I do. He walked off ahead of me. Studying him carefully, I realized I couldn't let the opportunity go by. I leapt at his back, positioning myself exactly the way he'd taught me. I had the element of surprise. Everything was perfect, and he wouldn't even see me coming. Before I could make contact, he spun around at a ridiculously high speed. In one deft motion, he grabbed me like I weighed nothing and threw me to the ground, pinning me there. I groaned. I didn't do anything wrong. His eyes looked levelly into mine as he held my wrists, but he didn't look as serious as he had during the lesson. He seemed to find this funny.
The battle cry sort of gave you away. Try not to yell next time.
Would it have really made a difference if I had been quiet? He thought about it.
No. Probably not.
I sighed loudly, still in too much of a good mood to really let this disappointment get me down. There were some advantages to having such a kick-ass mentor, one who always happened to have a foot of height on me and outweighed me considerably. And that wasn't even considering his strength. He wasn't bulky, but his body had a lot of hard, lean muscle. If I could ever beat him, I could beat anyone. All of a sudden, it occurred to me that he was still holding me down. The skin on his fingers was warm as he clutched my wrists. His face hovered inches from my own, and his legs and torso were actually pressing against mine. Some of his long brown hair hung around his face, and he appeared to be noticing me, too. Almost like he had that night in the lounge. And oh God, did he smell good. Breathing became difficult for me, and it had nothing to do with the workout or my lungs being crushed. I would have given anything to be able to read his mind right then. Ever since that night in the lounge, I'd noticed him watching me with the same studious expression. He never actually did it during the trainings themselves. Those were business. But before and after, he would sometimes lighten up just a little, and I'd see him look at me in a way that was almost admiring. And sometimes, if I was really, really lucky, he'd smile at me. A real smile, too, not the dry one that accompanied the sarcasm we tossed around so often. I didn't want to admit it to anyone, not to Lissa, not even to myself. But some days, I lived for those smiles. They lit up his face. Gorgeous, no longer adequately described him. Hoping to appear calm, I tried to think of something professional and guardian-related to say. Instead, I said, So, you got any other moves to show me? His lips twitched, and for a moment, I thought I was going to get one of those smiles. My heart leaped. Then, with visible effort, he pushed the smile back and once more became my tough love mentor. He shifted off me, leaned back on his heels, and rose.
Come on, we should go.
I scrambled to my own feet and followed him out of the gym. He didn't look back as he walked, and I mentally kicked myself on the way back to my room. I was crushing on my mentor. Crushing on my older mentor. I had to be out of my mind. He was 7 years older than me, old enough to be my Well, okay, nothing, but still older than me. 7 years was a lot. He'd been learning to write when I was born. When I'd been learning to write and throw books at my teachers, he'd probably been kissing girls. Probably lots of girls, considering how he looked. I so did not need this complication in my life right now. I found a passable sweater back in my room, and after a quick shower, I headed across campus to the reception. Despite the looming stone walls, fancy statues, and turrets on the outside of the buildings, the academy's insides were quite modern. We had Wi-Fi, fluorescent lights, and just about anything else technological you could imagine. The commons in particular looked pretty much like the cafeterias I'd eaten in while in Portland and Chicago, with simple rectangular tables, soothing taupe walls, and a little room off to the side where our dubiously prepared meals were served. Someone had at least hung framed black and white photos along the walls in an effort to decorate it, but I didn't really consider pictures of vases and leafless trees art. Tonight, however, someone had managed to transform the normally boring commons into a bona fide dining room. Vases spilling over with crimson roses and delicate white lilies, glowing candles, tablecloths made of, wait for it, blood red linen. The effect was gorgeous. It was hard to believe this was the same place I usually ate chicken patty sandwiches in. It looked fit for, well, a queen. The tables had been arranged in straight lines, creating an aisle down the middle of the room. We had assigned seating, and naturally, I couldn't sit anywhere near Lissa. She sat in the front with the other Morai. I was in the back with the novices. But she did catch my eye when I entered and flashed me a smile. She'd borrowed a dress from Natalie. Blue, silky, and strapless, that looked amazing with her pale features. Who'd known Natalie owned anything so good? It made my sweater lose a few cool points. They always conducted these formal banquets in the same way. A head table sat on a dais at the front of the room, where we could all ooh and ah and watch Queen Tatiana and other royals eat dinner. Guardians lined the walls, as stiff and formal as statues. Dimitri stood among them, and a weird feeling twisted my stomach as I recalled what had happened in the gym. His eyes stared straight ahead, as if focusing on nothing and everything in the room at once. When the time came for the royals' entrance, we all stood up respectfully and watched as they walked down the aisle. I recognized a few, mostly those who had children attending the academy. Victor Dashkov was among them, walking slowly and with a cane. While I was happy to see him, I cringed to watch each agonizing step he took toward the front of the room. Once that group had passed, four solemn guardians with red and black pinstripe jackets entered the commons. Everyone but the guardians along the walls sank to our knees in a silly show of loyalty. What a lot of ceremony and posturing, I thought wearily. Moroi monarchs were chosen by the previous monarch from within the royal families. The king or queen couldn't choose one of his or her own direct descendants, and a council from the noble and royal families could dispute the choice with enough cause. That almost never happened, though. Queen Tatiana followed her guards wearing a red silk dress and matching jacket. She was in her early 60s and had dark gray hair bobbed to her chin and crowned with a Miss America-type tiara. She moved into the room slowly, like she was taking a stroll, four more guardians at her back. She moved through the novices' section fairly quickly, though she did nod and smile here and there. Vampires might be just the half-human, illegitimate children of the Moroi, but we trained and dedicated our lives to serving and protecting them. The likelihood was strong that many of us gathered here would die young, and the queen had to show her respect for that. When she got to the Moroi section, she paused longer and actually spoke to a few students. It was a big deal to be acknowledged, mostly a sign that someone's parents had gotten in good with her. Naturally, the royals got the most attention. She didn't really say much to them that was all that interesting, mostly just a lot of fancy words.
Vasilisa Dragomir.
My head shot up. Alarm coursed through the bond at the sound of her name. Breaking protocol, I pushed out of my position and wiggled over to get a better view. knowing no one would notice me when the queen herself had personally singled out the last of the Dragomirs. Everyone was eager to see what the monarch had to say to Lyssa, the runaway princess.
"We heard you had returned. We are glad to have the Dragomirs back, even though only one remains. We deeply regret the loss of your parents and your brother. They were among the finest of the Moroi, their deaths a true tragedy."
I'd never really understood the royal we thing, but otherwise everything sounded okay.
"You have an interesting name," she continued. "Many heroines in Russian fairy tales are named Vasilisa. Vasilisa the Brave, Vasilisa the Beautiful. They are different young women, all having the same name and the same excellent qualities. Strength, intelligence, discipline, and virtue. All accomplished great things, triumphing over their adversaries. Likewise, the Dragomir name commands its own respect. Dragomir kings and queens have ruled wisely and justly in our history. They have used their powers for miraculous ends. They have slain Strigoi, fighting right alongside their guardians. They are royal for a reason."
She waited a moment, letting the weight of her words sink in. I could feel the mood changing in the room, as well as the surprise and shy pleasure creeping out from Lyssa. This would shake the social balance. We could probably expect a few wannabes trying to get in good with Lyssa tomorrow.
"Yes," Tatiana continued. "You are doubly named with power. Your names represent the finest qualities people have to offer, and hearken back in time to deeds of greatness and valor."
She paused a moment.
"But, as you have demonstrated, names do not make a person, nor do they have any bearing on how that person turns out."
And with that verbal slap in the face, she turned away and continued her procession. A collective shock filled the room. I briefly contemplated and then dismissed any attempts at jumping into the aisle and tackling the queen. Half a dozen guardians would have me down on the floor before I'd even taken 5 steps. So I sat impatiently through dinner, all the while feeling Lyssa's absolute mortification. When the post-dinner reception followed, Lyssa made a beeline for the doors leading out to the courtyard. I followed, but got delayed having to weave around and avoid the mingling, socializing people. She'd wandered outside to an adjacent courtyard, one that matched the academy's grand external style. A roof of carved, twisting wood covered the garden, with little holes here and there to let in some light, but not enough to cause damage to Moroi. Trees, leaves now gone for the winter, lined the area and guarded paths leading out to other gardens, courtyards, and the main quadrangle. A pond, also emptied for the winter, lay in a corner, and standing over it was an imposing statue of Saint Vladimir himself. Carved of gray rock, he wore long robes and had a beard and mustache. Rounding a corner, I stopped when I saw Natalie had beaten me to Lyssa. I considered interrupting, but stepped back before they could see me. Spying might be bad, but I was suddenly very curious to hear what Natalie had to say to Lyssa.
"She shouldn't have said that," Natalie said.
She wore a yellow dress similar in cut to Lyssa's, but somehow lacked the grace and poise to make it look as good. Yellow was also a terrible color on her. It clashed with her black hair, which she'd put up into an off-center bun.
"It wasn't right," she went on. "Don't let it bother you. Kind of late for that."
Lyssa's eyes were locked firmly on the stone walkway below.
"She was wrong. She's right," Lyssa exclaimed. "My parents, and Andre, they would have hated me for what I did." "No, they wouldn't have," Natalie spoke in a gentle voice. "It was stupid to run away, irresponsible." "So what? You made a mistake. I make mistakes all the time. The other day I was doing this assignment in science, and it was for Chapter 10, and I'd actually read Chapter 11.
Natalie stopped herself, and in a remarkable show of restraint, got herself back on track.
People change. We're always changing, right? You're not the same as you were then. I'm not the same as I was then.
Actually, Natalie seemed exactly the same to me, but that didn't bother me so much anymore. She'd grown on me.
Besides, she added, was running away really a mistake? You must have done it for a reason. You must have gotten something out of it, right? There was a lot of bad stuff going on with you, wasn't there? With your parents and your brother. I mean, maybe it was the right thing to do.
Lissa hid a smile. Both of us were pretty sure Natalie was trying to find out why we had left, just like everyone else in the school. She sort of sucked at being sneaky.
I don't know if it was, no, Lissa answered. I was weak. Andre wouldn't have run away. He was so good. Good at everything. Good at getting along with people and all that royal crap.
You're good at that, too.
I guess. But I don't like it. I mean, I like people, but most of what they do is so fake. That's what I don't like.
Then don't feel bad about not getting involved, Natalie said. I don't hang out with all those people either. And look at me. I'm just fine. Daddy says he doesn't care if I hang out with the royals or not. He just wants me to be happy.
And that, I said, finally making my appearance, is why he should be ruling instead of that bitch of a queen. He got robbed. Natalie nearly jumped 10 feet. I felt pretty confident her vocabulary of swear words mostly consisted of golly and darn.
I wondered where you were, said Lissa.
Natalie looked back and forth between us, suddenly seeming a little embarrassed to be right between the best friend's dream team. She shifted uncomfortably and tucked some messy hair behind her ear.
Well, I should go find Daddy. I'll see you back in the room.
See you, said Lissa.
And thanks.
Natalie hurried off. Does she really call him Daddy? Lissa cut me a look.
Leave her alone. She's nice.
She is, actually. I heard what she said, and as much as I hate to admit it, there was nothing there I could really make fun of. It was all true. I paused. I'll kill her, you know. The queen, not Natalie. Screw the guardians, I'll do it. She can't get away with that.
God, Rose, don't say that. They'll arrest you for treason. Just let it go.
Let it go? After what she said to you? In front of everyone? She didn't answer or even look at me. Instead, she toyed absentmindedly with the branches of a scraggly bush that had gone dormant for the winter. There was a vulnerable look about her that I recognized and feared. Hey, I lowered my voice. Don't look like that. She doesn't know what she's talking about, okay? Don't let this get you down. Don't do anything you shouldn't. She glanced back up at me.
It's going to happen again, isn't it?
She whispered. Her hand, still clutching the tree, began to tremble. Not if you don't let it. I tried to look at her wrists without being too obvious. You haven't...
No.
She shook her head and blinked back tears.
I haven't wanted to. I was upset after the fox, but it's been okay. I like the coasting thing. I miss seeing you, but everything's been all right. I like...
She paused. I could hear the word forming in her mind. Christian.
I wish you couldn't do that. Or wouldn't.
Sorry. Do I need to give you the Christian's a psychopathic loser talk again?
I think I've got it memorized after the last 10 times, she muttered.
I started to launch into number 11 when I heard the sound of laughter and the clatter of high heels on stone. Mia walked toward us with a few friends in tow, but no Aaron. Immediately, my defenses snapped on. Internally, Lissa was still shaken over the queen's comments. Sorrow and humiliation were swirling inside of her. She felt embarrassed over what others must think of her now and kept thinking about how her family would have hated her for running away. I didn't believe that, but it felt real to her, and her dark emotions churned and churned. She was not okay, no matter how casual she'd just tried to act, and I was worried she might do something reckless. Mia was the last person she needed to see right now.
"What do you want?" I demanded.
Mia smiled haughtily at Lissa and ignored me, taking a few steps forward.
"Just wanted to know what it's like to be so important and so royal. You must be so excited that the queen talked to you."
Giggles surfaced from the gathering group.
"You're standing too close."
I stepped between them, and Mia flinched a little, possibly still worried I might break her arm. And hey, at least the queen knew her name, which is more than I can say for you and your wannabe royal act, or your parents. I could see the pain that caused her. Man, she wanted to be royal so badly.
"At least I see my parents," she retorted. "At least I know who they both are. God only knows who your father is. And your mom's one of the most famous guardians around, but she couldn't care less about you either. Everyone knows she never visits. Probably was glad when you were gone, if she even noticed."
That hurt. I clenched my teeth. Yeah, well, at least she's famous. She really does advise royals and nobles. She doesn't clean up after them. I heard one of her friends snicker behind her. Mia opened her mouth, no doubt to unleash one of the many retorts she'd had to accumulate since the story started going around, when the light bulb suddenly went off in her head.
"It was you," she said, eyes wide. "Someone told me Jesse'd started it, but he couldn't have known anything about me. He got it from you, when you slept with him."
Now she was really starting to piss me off. I didn't sleep with him. Mia pointed at Lissa and glared back at me.
"So that's it, huh? You do her dirty work because she's too pathetic to do it herself. You aren't always going to be able to protect her," she warned. "You aren't safe either."
Empty threats. I leaned forward, making my voice as menacing as possible. In my current mood, it wasn't difficult.
"Yeah?
Try and touch me now and find out." Oh, I hoped she would. I wanted her to. We didn't need her messed up vendetta in our lives just now. She was a distraction, one I very much wanted to punch right now. Looking past her, I saw Dimitri move out into the garden, eyes searching for something or someone. I had a pretty good idea who it was. When he saw me, he strode forward, shifting his attention when he noticed the crowd gathered around us. Guardians can smell a fight a mile away. Of course, a 6-year-old could have smelled this fight. Dimitri stood beside me and crossed his arms.
"Everything all right?"
"Sure thing, Guardian Belikov." I smiled as I said it, but I was furious, raging even. This whole Mia confrontation had only made Lissa feel worse. We were just swapping family stories. Ever heard Mia's? It's fascinating.
"Come on," said Mia to her followers.
She led them off, but not before she'd given me one last chilling look. I didn't need to read her mind to know what it said. This wasn't over. She was going to try to get one or both of us back. Fine. Bring it on, Mia.
"I'm supposed to take you back to your dorm," Dimitri told me dryly. "You weren't about to just start a fight, were you?"
"Of course not," I said, my eyes still staring at the empty doorway Mia had disappeared through. "I don't start fights where people can see them."
"Rose,"
groaned Lissa.
"Let's go. Good night, princess."
He turned, but I didn't move. "You going to be okay, Liz?" She nodded.
"I'm fine."
It was such a lie. I couldn't believe she had the nerve to try to put it past me. I didn't need the bond to see tears shining in her eyes. We should never have come back to this place, I realized bleakly. "Liz." She gave me a small, sad smile and nodded in Dimitri's direction.
I told you I'm fine. You've got to go.
Reluctantly, I followed him. He led me out toward the other side of the garden.
We may need to add an extra training on self-control, he noted.
I have plenty of Hey! I stopped talking as I saw Christian slip past us, moving down the path we'd just come from. I hadn't seen him at the reception, but if Kirova had released me to come tonight, I suppose she would have done the same for him. You going to see Lissa? I demanded, shifting my Mia rage to him. He stuffed his hands into his pockets and gave me that look of bad boy indifference.
What if I am? Rose, this isn't the time, said Dimitri.
But it was so the time. Lissa had ignored my warnings about Christian for weeks. It was time to go to the source and stop their ridiculous flirtation once and for all. Why don't you just leave her alone? Are you so messed up and desperate for attention that you can't tell when someone doesn't like you? He scowled. You're some crazy stalker, and she knows it. She's told me all about your weird obsession, how you're always hanging out in the attic together, how you set Ralph on fire to impress her. She thinks you're a freak, but she's too nice to say anything. His face had paled, and something dark churned in his eyes.
But you aren't too nice.
No, not when I feel sorry for someone.
Enough, said Dimitri, steering me away. Thanks for helping, then, snapped Christian, his voice dripping with animosity.
No problem, I called back over my shoulder. When we'd gone a little ways, I stole a glance behind me and saw Christian standing just outside the garden. He'd stopped walking and now stood staring down the path that led to Lissa in the courtyard. Shadows covered his face as he thought, and then, after a few moments, he turned around and headed back toward the Moroi dorms. Chapter 12. Sleep came reluctantly that night, and I tossed and turned for a long time before finally going under. An hour or so later, I sat up in bed, trying to relax and sort out the emotions coming to me. Lissa, scared and upset, unstable. The night's events suddenly came rushing back to me as I went through what could be bothering her. The queen humiliating her, Mia, maybe even Christian. He could have found her for all I knew. Yet, none of those was the problem right now. Buried within her, there was something else, something terribly wrong. I climbed out of bed, dressed hastily, and considered my options. I had a third-floor room now, way too high to climb down from, particularly since I had no Ms. Karp to patch me up this time. I would never be able to sneak out of the main hall. That only left going through the appropriate channels.
Where do you think you're going?
One of the matrons who supervised my hall looked up from her chair. She sat stationed at the end of the hall, near the stairs going down. During the day, that stairwell had loose supervision. At night, we might as well have been in jail. I crossed my arms. I need to see Guardian Belikov.
It's late.
It's an emergency. She looked me up and down.
You seem okay to me.
You are going to be in so much trouble tomorrow when everyone finds out you stopped me from reporting what I know.
Tell me.
It's private guardian stuff. I gave her as hard a stare as I could manage. It must have worked because she finally stood up and pulled out a cell phone. She called someone, Dimitri, I hoped, but murmured too low for me to hear. We waited several minutes, and then the door leading to the stairs opened. Dimitri appeared, fully dressed and alert, though I felt pretty sure we'd pulled him out of bed. He took one look at me.
Lissa?
I nodded. Without another word, he turned around and started back down the stairs. I followed. We walked across the quad in silence, toward the imposing Moroi dorm. It was night for the vampires, which meant it was daytime for the rest of the world. Mid-afternoon sun shone with a cold, golden light on us. The human genes in me welcomed it and always sort of regretted how Moroi light sensitivity forced us to live in darkness most of the time. Lissa's hall matron gaped when we appeared, but Dimitri was too intimidating to oppose. "She's in the bathroom," I told them. When the matron started to follow me inside, I wouldn't let her. "She's too upset. Let me talk to her alone first." Dimitri considered.
"Yes. Give them a minute."
I pushed the door open. "Liss?" A soft sound, like a sob, came from within. I walked down 5 stalls and found the only one closed. I knocked softly. "Let me in," I said, hoping I sounded calm and strong. I heard a sniffle, and a few moments later, the door unlatched. I wasn't prepared for what I saw. Lissa stood before me, covered in blood. Horrified, I squelched a scream and almost called for help. Looking more closely, I saw that a lot of the blood wasn't actually coming from her. It was smeared on her, like it had been on her hands and she rubbed her face. She sank to the floor and I followed, kneeling before her. "Are you okay?" I whispered. "What happened?" She only shook her head, but I saw her face crumple as more tears spilled from her eyes. I took her hands. "Come on, let's get you cleaned." I stopped. She was bleeding after all. Perfect lines crossed her wrists, not near any crucial veins, but enough to leave wet, red tracks across her skin. She hadn't hit her veins when she did this. Death hadn't been her goal. She met my eyes.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean... Please, don't let them know."
She sobbed.
"When I saw it, I freaked out."
She nodded towards her wrists.
"This just happened before I could stop. I was upset."
"It's okay," I said automatically, wondering what it was. "Come on." I heard a knock on the door.
"Rose?"
"Just a sec," I called back. I took her to the sink and rinsed the blood off her wrists. Grabbing the first aid kit, I hastily put some band-aids on the cuts. The bleeding had already slowed.
"We're coming in," the matron called.
I jerked off my hoodie sweatshirt and quickly handed it to Lissa. She had just pulled it on when Dimitri and the matron entered. He raced to our sides in an instant, and I realized that in hiding Lissa's wrists, I'd forgotten about the blood on her face.
"It's not mine," she said quickly, seeing his expression. "It's the rabbit."
Dimitri assessed her, and I hoped he wouldn't look at her wrists. When he seemed satisfied she had no gaping wounds, he asked,
"What rabbit?"
I was wondering the same thing. With shaking hands, she pointed at the trash can.
"I cleaned it up, so Natalie wouldn't see."
Dimitri and I both walked over and peered into the can. I pulled myself away immediately, swallowing back my stomach's need to throw up. I don't know how Lissa knew it was a rabbit. All I could see was blood. Blood and blood-soaked paper towels. Globs of gore I couldn't identify. The smell was horrible. Dimitri shifted closer to Lissa, bending down until they were at eye level.
"Tell me what happened."
He handed her several tissues.
"I came back about an hour ago, and it was there, right there in the middle of the floor, torn apart. It was like it had exploded."
She sniffed.
"I didn't want Natalie to find it. I didn't want to scare her. So I cleaned it up. Then I couldn't go back."
She began to cry and her shoulders shook. I could figure out the rest, the part she didn't tell Dimitri. She'd found the rabbit, cleaned up, and freaked out. Then she'd cut herself. But it was the weird way she coped with things that upset her.
"No one should be able to get into those rooms," exclaimed the matron. "How is this happening?"
"Do you know who did it?"
Dimitri's voice was gentle. Lissa reached into her pajama pocket and pulled out a crumpled piece of paper. It had so much blood soaked into it, I could barely read it as he held it and smoothed it out. "I know what you are. You won't survive being here. I'll make sure of it. Leave now. It's the only way you might live through this." The matron's shock transformed into something more determined, and she headed for the door. I'm getting Ellen. It took me a second to remember that was Kirova's first name.
Tell her we'll be at the clinic, said Dmitri.
When she left, he turned to Lissa.
You should lay down.
When she didn't move, I linked my arm through hers. Come on, Liss. Let's get you out of here. Slowly, she put one foot in front of the other and let us lead her to the Academy's medical clinic. It was normally staffed by a couple of doctors, but at this time of night, only a nurse stayed on duty. She offered to wake one of the doctors, but Dmitri declined.
She just needs to rest.
Lissa had no sooner stretched out on a narrow bed than Kirova and a few others showed up and started questioning her. I thrust myself in front of them, blocking her. Leave her alone! Can't you see she doesn't want to talk about it? Let her get some sleep first.
Miss Hathaway, declared Kirova, you're out of line as usual. I don't even know what you're doing here.
Dmitri asked if he could speak with her privately and led her into the hall. I heard angry whispers from her, calm and firm ones from him. When they returned, she said stiffly,
You may stay with her for a little while. We'll have janitors do further cleaning and investigation in the bathroom, in your room, Miss Dragomir, and then discuss the situation in detail in the morning.
Don't wake Natalie, whispered Lissa. I don't want to scare her. I cleaned up everything in the room anyway.
Kirova looked doubtful. The group retreated, but not before the nurse asked if Lissa wanted anything to eat or drink. She declined. Once we were alone, I lay down beside her and put my arm around her. I won't let them find out, I told her, sensing her worry about her wrists. But I wish you'd told me before I left the reception. You said you'd always come to me first.
I wasn't going to do it then,
she said, her eyes staring blankly off.
I swear I wasn't going to. I mean, I was upset. But I thought I could handle it. I was trying so hard. Really, Rose, I was. But then I got back to my room and I saw it, and I just lost it. It was like the last straw, you know? And I knew I had to clean it up. Had to clean it up before they saw, before they found out. But there was so much blood. And afterward, after it was done, it was too much. And I felt like I was going to, I don't know, explode, and it was just too much. I had to let it out, you know? I had to...
I interrupted her hysteria. It's okay. I understand. That was a lie. I didn't get her cutting at all. She'd done it sporadically, ever since the accident, and it scared me each time. She'd try to explain it to me, how she didn't want to die. She just needed to get it out somehow. She felt so much emotionally, she would say, that a physical outlet, physical pain, was the only way to make the internal pain go away. It was the only way she could control it.
Why is this happening? She cried into her pillow. Why am I a freak?
You aren't a freak.
No one else has this happen to them. No one else does magic like I can.
Did you try to do magic? No answer. Liss, did you try to heal the rabbit?
I reached out, just to see if I could maybe fix it. But there was just too much blood. I couldn't.
The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Lissa was right. Moroi magic could conjure fire and water, move rocks and other pieces of earth. But no one could heal or bring animals back from the dead. No one except Ms. Karp. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here. I hated carrying this secret, mostly because I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't like feeling powerless. I needed to protect her from this and from herself. And yet, at the same time, I needed to protect her from them, too. We should go, I said abruptly. We're going to leave.
Rose,
it's happening again, and it's worse. Worse than last time.
You're afraid of the note.
I'm not afraid of any note. But this place isn't safe. I suddenly longed for Portland again. It might be dirtier and more crowded than the rugged Montana landscape, but at least you knew what to expect. Not like here. Here at the academy, past and present warred with each other. It might have its beautiful old walls and gardens, but inside, modern things were creeping in. People didn't know how to handle that. It was just like the Moroi themselves. Their archaic royal families still held the power on the surface. But people were growing discontent. Dampires who wanted more to their lives. Moroi, like Christian, who wanted to fight the Strigoi. The royals still clung to their traditions, still touted their power over everyone else, just as the Academy's elaborate iron gates put on a show of tradition and invincibility. And oh, the lies and secrets. They ran through the halls and hid in the corners. Someone here hated Lyssa. Someone who was probably smiling right to her face and pretending to be her friend. I couldn't let them destroy her. "You need to get some sleep," I told her.
"I can't sleep."
"Yes, you can. I'm right here. You won't be alone." Anxiety and fear and other troubled emotions coursed through her, but in the end, her body's needs won out. After a while, I saw her eyes close. Her breathing became even, and the bond grew quiet. I watched her sleep, too keyed up with adrenaline to allow myself any rest. I think maybe an hour had passed when the nurse returned and told me I had to leave. "I can't go," I said. I promised her she wouldn't be alone. The nurse was tall, even for a Moroi, with kind brown eyes.
"She won't be. I'll stay with her."
I regarded her skeptically.
"I promise."
Back in my room, I had my own crash. The fear and excitement had worn me out, too, and for an instant, I wished I could have had a normal life and a normal best friend. Immediately, I cast that thought out. No one was normal, not really. And I never had a better friend than Lyssa. But man, it was so hard sometimes. I slept heavily until morning. I went to my first class tentatively, nervous that word about last night had gotten around. As it turned out, people were talking about last night, but their attention was still focused on the queen and the reception. They knew nothing about the rabbit. As hard as it was to believe, I'd nearly forgotten about that other stuff. Still, it suddenly seemed like a small thing compared to someone causing a bloody explosion in Lyssa's room. Yet, as the day went on, I noticed something weird. People stopped looking at Lyssa so much. They started looking at me. Whatever. Ignoring them, I hunted around and found Lyssa finishing up with a feeder. That funny feeling I always got came over me as I watched her mouth work against the feeder's neck, drinking his blood. A trickle of it ran down his throat, standing out against his pale skin. Feeders, though human, were nearly as pale as Moroi from all the blood loss. He didn't seem to notice. He was long gone on the high of the bite. Drowning in jealousy, I decided I needed therapy.
"You okay?"
I asked her later on our way to class. She wore long sleeves, purposefully obscuring her wrists.
"Yeah. I still can't stop thinking about that rabbit. It was so horrible. I keep seeing it in my head. And then, what I did..."
She squeezed her eyes shut just for a moment and then opened them again.
"People are talking about us."
"I know. Ignore them."
"I hate it," she said angrily.